then the other thing I wanted to update, or there's two things. One is kind of like the data path for UDOH that we sort of already or kind of agreed to or would like to work through. And then the other thing is where are we with the tech side of getting your data into the UERC? So as far as the data path is concerned, we're going to start with birth and death certificates, which we are, I would say, 90% there on those. The next thing we are going to be targeting will be the WIC data, home visiting, baby watch, and the APCD. So that's sort of our future data path for UDOH for everyone here involved. So that's a considerable amount of data, especially the APCD coming over to the UDRC. And it's the last thing that we have here on the list. So we're sort of preparing ourselves for that large amount of data. Do you want to update then on where we're at with receiving data?
Yeah, but just one thing with that, we're still looking through all the legalities of all of them, so that's where we want to go, but until we work through with attorneys, we're not sure on some of those. As far as the data transfer, so there's a couple of different things. Some of the data elements that you wanted they're in what we call our statistical files, which are the annual files we extract from our database. We work with NCS to do some coding and adding things, especially the occupation that you want. So we need to use the statistical files. One of the challenges is that it has the formatting of that has changed over time. I mean, you guys heard that already in the meeting. So we will need to standardize those in a table. We'll standardize them to the most current format, which is as good for at least the three most recent years. So that will take a little time. For the actual transfer mechanism, we had the meeting with your folks, which was really helpful to decide how we wanted to do the transfer and what our security folks were comfortable with. And because we're going to be submitting so many different data sets, we've decided to go through our Health Informatics Office, which is the center office for interoperability. They are going to stand up a server and a database specifically for UDRC, and we will put then the data sets there from all of our different data sources to transfer. That way we can use your transfer program. That, I just got the update and the breakdown for that. They're anticipating that's going to take 12 weeks. So what I needed to check is, so they've already been working on the programming to extract the data for you. We could send the first few files once we have the signed appendix through. Move it, just send JSON or through there so that you can start getting some while we're setting up the infrastructure for our long-term transfers. Do you want to do that?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. So you're saying the first 3 years because that's already standardized, or are you saying...
Because it's already standardized, and the other ones they'll have to pull in and match the format.
Sorry, the last 3 years. That's what the last 3 years of data. So 2017, 16. Okay, great. That should be great because then we could... I'm sure there will be a period of time where we have to test out your data through the system. Mm-hmm. That's what we encounter with a lot of the other partners. So that will be great for us to be working on that while you guys are working on setting up the infrastructure for the long-term data delivery for the UDRC. So,
right.
Great. How would you like for us to proceed with that then?
Just when we get it ready, I'll let you know and we'll... say watch for a move it email.
How much longer do you think it will take you guys to get it ready?
I will have to check. Like I said, we have to get the signature, which I'll try to get to this week. Linda's had a death in the family, so she's kind of spotty up and on. But hopefully the next week or two we would be able to get that to you.
Perfect.
We'll need to come and install that.
No. So
you're just going to set a file with
these
others? Yes. For these initial, because we're working on that long term where we'll set up the infrastructure to install your transfer program.
Yeah. Okay, so that is anything else you want to update from UDOH?
I don't think so.
Okay, great. So let's move on to the technology update. So let me start off by saying that we've implemented MPI 2.0. So Master Person Index Algorithm 2.0. And so the main idea here is to, as we started using the data, integrating it through the UDRC system, we started realizing that there were areas where we could improve on to enhance the matching process. And so that's what we've done. And so Ryan will provide more detail on what that means and how does that look like and so on.
Do you want to? I'll talk just, my name is Ryan Burton. I'm the project manager on the DTS side of this application. With me I have Nirmal, Vishal is his last name, and then Manjusha Gupta. There are developers currently midway through the process of importing data. We changed out architects on the project, and we're in the process of hiring a new architect. That being said, I'm excited to share just some information that we implemented, or some share with you the information of what we implemented and how it affects the UDRC data in general. So we took, I'm going to talk off screen for just a minute. So we took an approach, two different approaches to the data. One is a deterministic matching approach. A deterministic match is going to be student IDs within the same partner, SSNs, for example. They're ways that we can reasonably, with a really high level of certainty, believe that we found an appropriate or an accurate match. And then with that presents some issues because not all partners have SSNs, and then those student IDs within USBD, USHI, and UTEC, you know, they're designated throughout, you know, individually throughout each education system. And so the second approach that we've taken is a probabilistic match. The probabilistic match uses demographic data as much as we have to match individuals. So there we're looking for first name, last name, dates of birth, gender, middle name, and we'll be adding some additional demographic information to match people on there. So the slide that's up on the screen talks a little bit about how that matching works. I got copies of this. I'll pass out. And Zach, I emailed you this presentation, so you can follow along
with the
presentation. So some of the I guess learning curve that we're having is understanding your data well enough to match, right? So the first data set that we imported was USBD. Primarily USBD gives us a foundation of demographic information. Once we put USBD in, obviously every unique individual there matched. And so that's 100% success for us. We were really excited about that.
We'll take it.
After we imported the USBD data, we added USHI, and that's where the fun began. Because then USHI provides a social security number, their own student ID, and the match in that particular instance has to be demographic. So we used the probabilistic matching method there, and we used first name, last name, and date of birth, mostly, in that instance. The match there, of the 696,381 unique individuals within USHI, we were able to match with a really high level of certainty there backwards across to USBD as we compare that data set. USHI introduces, like I said, the SSN as well as demographic information. And so after we imported the USHI data, we were able to add UTEC. UTEC also has a social security number, which is a deterministic match, and was helped in that matching there. And then we followed it up with the DWS data, which is quarterly wage data. what we found was the DWS quarterly wage data was the messiest data set of all of them. There's really no safeguarding mechanism. They can send it with basically any number that they want. It can be a real social security number, it can be a fake. They can use any variation of the name, you know, first name, last name. And that's the only really matching indicators that we had. So as we imported that, we started to see some problems creating MPIs that we shouldn't, for obvious reasons. The same SSN in some instances had like 20 usages of looked like real, you know, unique individuals. And so that sort of segues into where we're going with this. We realized that our algorithm, while it was matching at a pretty good success rate, that we needed to make it a little bit more robust. And so 2.1 is something that we'll be working on now moving forward. It segues into we need to process the data that you send us. So maintain the raw data and then process it prior to running it through our MPI system. So specific to each partner, we'll meet with Jeremiah's team, get some definitions of what that processing looks like for each partner, and then we'll, after we filter it, we'll run it through the MPI. Also, we noticed, we should have noticed this sooner, there's an SSID field that USBD assigns. I think they assign it around the sophomore year of high school. No? Do they assign it at entry? Okay. So the SSID field, we found approximately 30% of higher education people had matching SSIDs.
For those for USHEET.
For USHEET,
for
yeah.
For UTEC, it was 10%.
Sorry, did I say those backwards?
No, but if you ask.
Yeah, UTEC was 10%. So that'll be another number that we use in a deterministic match. So we'll be adding that to the algorithm. Naveena talked about the Department of Health. I think what our idea is with this, and I think I'm okay to say this, we've matched everything. We have pretty good data on that. I think in the future it'll matter less, you know, which order data comes in. But because we're matching demographically, you know, between USBD, we want to start with the baseline of what we think is going to be the most accurate and complete data set. We think that that should be the birth record, at least for people that are born in Utah. So those MPI and DI tables will clear out once we get DOH data. They'll rerun that. And then maybe in a month or two be able to have a better reporting on how the demographic piece works.
Yeah, so I think what Ron is referring to is the initial seeding of the MPI, or the Master Person Index, right? So when we first did it, we didn't consider the series that sort of like that's important. How you seed it is quite important, because if you seed a table that doesn't have demographic information, but it does have some sort of unique identifier, then an MPI will be created for that person, but no demographic information. And so that if you later on feed it information from like USB that doesn't have that same unique identifier, but has demographic information, it may not, it'll create two MPIs instead of one merge one. So the order of how you feed or seed the MPI is very, very critical. But I think what Ryan is getting at is that we believe that the birth and death certificate is probably the most accurate. Maybe Naveena's look here may not be the case.
At least given us 3 years. It's the most recent 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
That probably won't help now that I think about it, because we won't have any USB records.
Once we get the historical, it may help.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, there's can be amendments and name changes and things that can affect it, and then we've got populations of people who are missing in there, believe it or not, homeless folks or folks that didn't have a birth certificate, and So, I mean, there are some, I think it's pretty good, but yeah, there's going to be some gaps from some.
That is the exact same problem we found when we were looking at the wage record data, because especially for females, because if they get married and they change their last name, then the MPI, and this is something that we're going to be implementing, is would create two identities, right? Because we cannot just look at SSN, especially within the wage record, mm-hmm. right? Because like you said, there could be several people who have the same SSN, right? So we have to ascertain who do we take, so on. And so that would then see it as two different people, even though they're really the same person. So it has to be even more nuanced than that. So
I know
several people can have the same social security number.
Yeah.
The way the DWS data was presented to us, yeah.
Really?
So
Social Security know that?
Social Security doesn't issue two numbers to the same person.
Data quality,
either people using incorrect numbers or, you know, data error entries. It's just not validated once the employer reports it to us. It just is what it is.
I know our MPI, they have something built into the algorithm to deal with name changes of marriage. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I could ask.
Yeah. Well,
I could connect you if you wanted.
Yeah,
maybe you guys could learn from each
other. Yeah, I'll reach out to you to get information about it. I think our algorithm for it's going to involve a stored procedure on the front end that filters out data so that once it comes to the MPI, we're dealing with the most accurate set of that data that we possibly
can. Have you looked at all at, you should fill the previous last name to see if that's helpful at all?
It will be helpful to add that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's something that we noticed and talked about. Along with that, this is sort of internal lingo, but with 2.1, we'll have some ticketing and mapping changes. Right now, our MPI process and then our de-identification process afterwards, they're sort of linked. We're going to de-link those two things so that they can run independently and be ran, you know, if at any time, you know, data changes and they want a different subset on the identified side versus whatever, we'll restore or give power to Jeremiah's team to do that. That's sort of the changes on the horizon for 2.1. I kind of feel like as we become more familiar and have a greater understanding of your data sets, that these sorts of things we'll be able to improve upon. I kind of hope that we figure out a way to implement changes backwards in it too, so that once MPI is created, if something changes, you know, that dynamically the system can make those corrections, you know, backwards as well as forwards. But we talked about future ideas of like learning algorithms and things like that too. So those are things that are sort of on the long term. Right.
Yeah, so if you want to pass me I just want to show really quickly the connection to the.
Oh,
yeah.
Why did I do that?
So, just a preliminary look at MPI 2.0's ability to match.
Thank you.
there any questions? Did anyone have any questions?
So while he's pulling that up, I'll update really quickly as well on, so phase four of the UDRC build-out includes the MPI 2.1, which Ryan has specified what it's going to include, but it will also include a data manipulation layer. So we noticed that some of your data, for instance, is missing like a zero in the front of a specific variable, or it's missing, it's where it's null, you guys didn't put in like a null value, it's just left null, for example, and so on. So we're going to be making changes to the data in such a way that it's easier for our researchers to use in the long run. And so there will be this data manipulation layer, which we will specify to this group exactly what we are manipulating as far as data is concerned. There will also be UI and UX enhancements, so user interface, user experience enhancements. We will try to incorporate National Student Clearinghouse data one way or the other, whether it's through USHI's help or directly with the National Student Clearinghouse. And also, we've been talking about this for a minute, but the Amazon Web Services or AWS also going to the cloud, moving the UDRC to the cloud. So he was able to bring this up now. I just wanted to show the group this. So if you look in the top left, there is the connectivity or the linkage between USB data and USHI. So it was 322,000 matches between USB and USHI. The total population of USHIs was 696 during that period of time, meaning unique individuals. So that means the percent of the population we were able to match between USB and USHI was about 46%. So for USB and UTEC, it was 83,434, which is about 45% of their population. So it's really interesting that both of them are pretty close to one another. So yes, Laura, do you have a question?
I know Zach's on the phone. Zach, I was wondering if you expected that percentage to be a little bit higher. I'm trying to think of, I read the report this year and I can't remember the percentage. How many, what percentage of USB students you guys serve? I thought it was higher than that, but maybe that's about right.
We're actually having a report come out in the next little while from the UVPC, which gives a better look at how many, I mean, at what proportion of secondary students we serve. I couldn't tell you right now. We don't have the ability to, and I can tell you how many students, distinctly secondary students that we have, but I couldn't tell you what proportion that is of the statewide USB data file.
And something to understand also is that UTEC has an older average students, right? And we know this because of the CTE report. So that means that because they are older, then our time window of USB data, right, is 2011 through 2018. And so if they didn't graduate within that period of time, or if they're not there in that period of time, then we can't match them. So actually 45 and 46% is quite good. What we need to do is use these as benchmarks. So this will be MPI 2.0. We would like to see how MPI 2.1 or 2.2 in the future will actually affect these match rates in the future. So for USHI to UTEC, it was 8% of the USHI population and 30% of the UTEC population. So it looks like a lot more, relatively speaking, of UTEC students end up in USHI than vice versa. For USHI to DWS, it was 73% of the population, so 73% of your people and the USHI were detected in the DWS wage records. From UTEC to DWS was 67% of the population. And then from USB to DWS, this is indirect because we have to have someone from USB who goes into UTEC or USHI and then ultimately is in the wage record file. It was 16% of the population, and I did just kind of a back of the envelope type of estimation. If you think about it, we have K through 12, and really individuals are only able to work between the ages of, starting to work at age 16. So you have 16, 17, and 18, right? So that's 3 out of 13 years. Now, if it's equally distributed, which I don't know if it is, that's the number, the volume, I did 3 13th, which is 23%. So 16, 6.5 versus 23%. I need to actually do far more, again, this was back of the envelope calculation, but I need to actually look exactly what is the proportion of people in the USB records that we have that would actually be potentially able to work. And so it's most likely going to be less than 23%. But so the difference between 16 and 23% can come from several different areas. It could be because we're not matching correctly, or it could be because that 23%, not everyone works, for example, right? Not all kids who are 16, 17, and 18 work. So there you have it. As far as internal matching, so if you look at this right here, from USB to Yushi, the number of matchings that the MPI was able to ascertain, like I said, was 322,153 for USB to Yushi. This identified matches, 334,000, is the number that we sort of manually were able to produce by matching USB to Yushi. And so it is 334,000. So the difference there is 3.68%. So there's about a 3.68% error between what the MPI produced and what we believe it should produce. And so that difference there, it could be things from like the names being different. So as we receive data from Yushi, the name being different and so on. So these error rates right here are pretty good, except with UTEC and DWS being 7.85%. So we'll try to get these to as close to zero as possible in the future. So.
Do we have a standard at which we're comfortable with? I mean, obviously zero is beautiful.
Yeah,
but like,
perfect. I'm very comfortable with all of these. I think 2% could probably be a good threshold, I think. And the ones on the left right here, we'll use this as a benchmark. We'll use this as a benchmark, and effectively we will see future MPIs, how do they compare to this? Do they improve on this? So, definitely. Any questions on that, on all that? And Zach, I will send you the numbers today, okay?
Appreciate it, thank you.
Yeah. All right.
I don't have a question on this, but can you go back to what you were saying with storage? So right now, is that it's all hosted on DTS,
yes,
databases and servers, but you plan to move it to Amazon Web Service?
We have a plan of doing that. We would not do anything unless we had a conversation with the advisory board.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, I better run that past my security. I know that there's been more discussions with that, but yeah. Okay.
Just maybe to add a little bit to that, DTS, like up on the hill, DTS is determining the security basically for all applications that are moving to AWS for all state agencies. So they'll be dealing with, you know, a lot of the security ramifications and things like that. And so my guess is all agencies will have a voice in that, what security levels need to happen. But it sounds like it is an enterprise sort of.
Yeah, I know they've been working on that, but just not quite there yet.
That's where we're getting our instruction from.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Yeah, we would never do anything forward unless we had conversations with the advisory board. So that's always been the policy. So, all right. Any further questions on the technology updates and where we're going, what we're doing? Okay. Next is personnel. This actually should have read personnel-center updates. That was my mistake. But I'll start with the fact that we are creating a new data access policy. So we realize that the data access policy that we have currently in our data governance is, shall we say, naive. And so the more we encounter people requesting us data, the more we obviously realize that it needs to be far more nuanced and more detailed. So we are actually producing a data access policy, and Laura from Yushi is helping us. First in creating a draft, then we will present it to the advisory board. The advisory board will have a chance to provide comments and whatever concerns you guys may have. We'll incorporate the feedback, and then we'll finally incorporate it into our data governance documents. So that's going to be the process. So we hope to have the first draft coming in the following weeks. So we will not wait until the next advisory board meeting occurs. We'll send it out to the group here, and you guys can provide feedback. Well, there will be a period of time for you guys to provide feedback. So. This is a personnel update. So the data coordinator, which thankfully, I would like to thank USB for the generosity in allowing us to use the grant funds to hire an FT for strictly managing data requests. So the data coordinator will be Vincent Brandon. So next time we have an advisory board, I'll make sure that obviously he gets invited and that he will be here to introduce himself. But just to give you some insights into his background, so he has a BS in biochemistry and MS in business administration, certificates in data science, extensive knowledge of SQL coding and front-end work, and his first day will be November 25th, so next week. So he'll be starting. So in the future, if any of you have data requests, you'll be most likely working with Vincent directly. And then, of course, Vincent will be reporting to the manager and myself on what's going on that regard. As far as our user experience researcher, our US researcher, so Corey Staley left several or a couple months ago, and we were able to move Karen Tao, who is here today. So you want to introduce yourself?
Sure, I'm Karen Tao, and I'm currently the MIS division within WRA, and I'll be moving over to UDRC once MIS has a replacement.
Just a quick background on Karen's education. She has a BS in psychology and sociology, an MS in data science, specialized in algorithmic data science, so which will be really useful for us. Has extensive knowledge of SQL, R, Python, and D3, which is very useful because that's what we do our visualizations in. And her first expected start date will be December 2nd, or two weeks from this week. As far as the manager is concerned, so we're completing interviews this week, and we'll provide an update to the group at large as soon as we complete those interviews and we move forward with an offer. So the new manager will primarily focus on leading the production of world-class academic level research, and that's going to be their main thing that they do. So any questions on the personnel center updates? We'll move on to research updates. So first, I want to provide an update on our research templates. So effectively, what does the research at the UDRC look like? Kelsey created a new research template for our products, the Widow products. And then if you click on the ROI of Career and Technical Education, one below, no, to the right, yeah. And you go all the way down to the bottom. I had all this set up, but this thing is not working for me. So hit read report. Okay, so this is the old template that we used, and this was built in R Markdown, and we found that although you know useful for certain things. It was very difficult to format for example, dual columns. So it was really, really difficult for that. It was also difficult to sometimes with tables and graphs and so on. And so Kelsey did a great job of doing this. She created a template in InDesign. So if you go back go one back. Yeah. No, hey, Ryan, go back.
Just go back button.
Oh, go to the tab to the left, yeah. And hit the intergenerational poverty. Yeah. So this is what the new template is going to look like. So again, Kelsey did a great job with this. It's InDesign, which allows us to be far more specific in location of items, as well as the two columns fit significantly better. Do you want to add anything else, Kelsey, to what I've just said? So. And it looks more like what you'd see in an academic journal as far as the look and feel of it. So, all right. So effectively, we're kind of moving away from our Markdown as a team and going to more to InDesign. So, okay. First, I'll update on data requests to the group here, and then I'll update or we'll start on the research update. So we are currently actively working on four data requests. So there was a data request from Nathan Coons, which was communicated to the entire group or the impacted agencies. This was for a senior thesis, and the purpose of the research was to build a greater understanding of how the rurality of students impacts post-secondary attendance and institutional choice in Utah's technical schools and higher education systems. And Brittany did a great job of this, and she delivered the effectively what is the first consumer data delivery of the UDRC, because everything else has been more like, you know, Launch My Career, for instance, which was a Yushi product, or Kenzie Gardner or whatever. And so this was really the first time we actually used the application system. So we're really happy to sort of report that. So done, taken care of. Brittany did a great job of that. The next one is Jeffrey Olson, which is application 30021. It's an internal Yushi research. It's a study to designed to be a simple exploratory first step that should lead to a more sophisticated and comprehensive study. The purpose of the study is to understand more fully what is happening to the students over time who enroll at UDU. So we're working with Yushi to work through that data request. The new data coordinator will be managing this data request in the future. There's another one from Shannon Robson, which is 30015, again, another internal Yushi research. They're seeking 5 years of annualized wage data for all UVU graduates. It looks like UVU is very interested in getting access to UDRC data.
Yeah.
Again, the data coordinator will take care of this as well. There's another one from Andrea Rohrer, which is 30020, which this is a UEPC research. The purpose of the research is to provide complementary analysis of STEM-related access, readiness, and completion, and persistence. Again, the new data coordinator will take care of that.
The new data coordinator. So that's not one that I was aware of. So the new data coordinator will be reaching out to talk to us.
Yes,
about,
we have not. Yeah, we have not even started working. I said to Andrea that we're not touching that until we have the new data coordinator. The other ones were kind of in a different space. So that's right. Before we move into the actually updating research, I did, I'm really sorry, I forgot to introduce Derek to the group as part of the personnel updates. Sorry, Derek. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Derek Higgs. I just started as the research new research consultant in September. I'm finishing up my PhD in political science at the U. And my research background is in mixed methods, both quantitative and qualitative approaches. And I've been working here and loving it for the past 8 weeks. So okay. Good to get to know all of you at the same time.
We're really happy to have Derek. He's been a great resource in the team so far. So. All right. Let me jump into research updates. So Scholar would have updated, provided an update you guys to UDRC RA6, which is a broader economic impact of Yushi and UTEC graduates, but unfortunately he is on vacation, and so he says to all of you, I'm sorry that he's not here today. So he wanted me to say that to you guys. All right, so let me provide an update. So a partial rough draft is complete for the project and contains an introduction, an extensive literature review, methodology, and data section for the paper. 1 in 5 year wage data has been gathered for individuals with a technical certificate, both from Yushi and UTEC, as well as associate's degree, bachelor's degree, and master's degree, level degree and above. And the matching for high school graduates has been a bit of an issue because of the lack of data to be able to match across. So we're actively working on solutions for this specific. Living wage, Glassmere's Living Wage Index and Middle Class Wage 30th Percentile Wages in Utah thresholds have been calculated for all the three cohorts and 7 years of study. Wage thresholds will be superimposed on wage histograms for three cohorts in each educational group. And the consumption and savings is a function of disposable income is really important. That's why we're using things like the living wage or middle class wage break points. So I've seen the 1 year and the 5 year histograms for this, and they look really, really interesting. So how effectively 1 year after 1 to 5 years after graduation from a specific degree, the distribution of income changes, and it's quite interesting. Consumption estimates in 14 years of spending that are complete for all education groups. An income estimate for educational groups for 2018 will release in the near future from BLS, specifically the micro data pumps to 2018. So these estimates will be used as the income base for consumption. So there's an update. I probably didn't do it justice. What do you say? But he's not here, so that's as good as he's going to get so, right now. Okay. Moving on to UDRC IA2, which is the workforce retention of students. So I just want to provide some context. This is originally a joint project between Corey Staley and Tyler Kane, who was our unpaid intern. Corey left the team, and Tyler's internship concluded. At that point in time, the sort of the final product was about 85% completed. And Brittany was able to complete the remaining 15%, so she's done a great job of doing that. And she'll provide an update to the group at large on where we're at with that. So.
Yeah, so just to provide context of what the research is about, so it's workforce retention of UShe and UTech graduates, looking at the 2013 graduation cohort, and then looking at 1 year and 5 years after graduation to see if they are still in state and if they are in our wage records. So providing that overall rate, but then also breaking it down into different demographics, so like age, gender, race, ethnicity, also dividing it out by award level, financial aid status, geographic origin, and work history. And I want to provide like one or two general findings. So overall, the biggest indicator that was associated with staying in state was employment history. So in this, that meant that they were working, or that they were at least in our wage record 1 year prior to graduation. So that was the biggest indicator. Other indicators like out-of-state origin or higher award level was associated with leaving the state. So those are some interesting things. The research also, we also made predictions using the 2016 cohort. So we used machine learning methods to train and test our 2013 data, and then we fed in the 2016 cohort data, and we made a prediction on the one-year rate, and we were able to compare it to the actual to see how close we were. And then we also did that for 5 years out, so the 2021 workforce rate. So you'll see that in the report. In terms of where we're at in the process of our review, so we've reviewed it internally in UDRC, and it's currently in our communications division. They are reviewing it for grammar and our flow and checking on any inconsistencies. Once we get that back from them, it should be end of this week, we'll send it out to UShin UTech, our partners, for review. For any of your edits or feedback. Then we'll incorporate those, and then it will go to our executive director's office for final approval, and then we'll publish it. And then once we publish it, we post it online, and we send an email out to our partners and stakeholders announcing that.
So the standard publishing policy, which you have all received, will just be enacted out after that. So.
Remind me, who requested that study?
Sorry?
Who requested that study?
So it actually came from, we provided data for KMC Gardner Institute, on something similar to this, and we noticed some really, really interesting sort of patterns, and so it's sort of internally within UDRC.
Okay.
So the next will be UDRC RA4, which is student mobility, and Kelsey is leading that. We can provide an update on that.
Okay, so RA4 is the student mobility or student migration project. So in general, this is examining post-secondary institution migration and enrollment patterns in Utah, so looking at where USB students go following graduation. And then, I apologize, I'm getting over bad virus. And then, so I will be including demographic factors, including race, ethnicity, gender, and Pell eligibility, looking at geographic factors such as urban, rural dichotomies, and median income of county of origin of students to predict whether or not USC grads A, enroll in UTech or UShe institutions, and B, whether or not they attend institutions outside of their county or service UTech service region of origin. So looking at how students move around the state and whether or not we could predict how they move based on these demographic variables. So currently I've finished the literature review introduction methods. I'm working on data issues with matching and trying to clean data and get everything ready for analysis. And I hope to get started on the analysis within the next month or two.
Was there much literature on that? Was there, is people,
no. there's some literature looking at, I've been looking at across state migration, looking at what factors people have found that influence that, so kind of trying to bridge that.
Breaking new ground.
And trying to, because I know we've talked about this one, you're starting with a particular USBE graduation cohort and tracking them in, right?
Yeah, so we have graduation from 2011 to 2017, I think. So I'm trying to figure out exactly. I think I'm going to switch to enrollment due to we don't have enough USBE data far enough back to really look at graduation for a bachelor's degree. So I'm going to switch to enrollment. So I need to figure out what parameters I'm going to use to determine enrollment, like a year. Like, do they enroll within X number of years? Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. And then Derek will provide an update on UDFC RA5, which is Path Dependencies of Utah Students in Secondary Education.
Right. So I started working, picking up the ball from Allison's work, who I'm replacing. And what she had done with this so far was she did a preliminary literature review, very basic pre-proposal. And for about 3 weeks, I was working on a greater literature review for that project. And then when I was communicating with Yushi to set up a meeting to make sure we were in sync regarding the research project, she had mentioned that USB already had published a similar report that kind of answered all the questions I was going for. So we kind of had to pivot the direction of the research with Yushi and with USBE. And now, instead of looking at the influences of AP, concurrent enrollment, IB, and honors effects on post-secondary outcomes, we're looking at, we're trying to identify course taking patterns in high school and see if we can correlate those patterns with college readiness. And also, we are now looking at CTE students, and we're trying to track their complete trajectory or intended trajectory from high school to college. The CTE Pathways program was intended to have them have students take CTE courses in high school and then finish it in college, but they don't have data that that's happening in college. So I am. Part of my research is to track the CTE performance of college students and match that data with their high school CTE data. And the biggest block I have right now is getting a meeting with USBE and, and also UTEC we want to throw in to this as well because of all the CTE data that we might use. So from USBE, we'll just need to get on the same page as we did with Yushi and make sure that we're in sync regarding the specific research questions and what specific questions you want answered regarding the project overall. But it doesn't have to be now. We can do it. So.
Just to add, BYU is working on a little bit of the folks over at BYU who we contracted may be doing some of the work that you're overlapping as well.
That's BYU, so we don't trust them.
So
that's a joke.
I think in the meeting in the future when we have conversations, that could be something we could have a conversation about. So we'd love to hear that and see if. Okay, so that's Derek's updates on UDRC RA5. Any questions on what sort of research we're conducting I think we're communicating very well with all the partners. So I, you know, this should not have been a surprise to any of you, like, you know, what research we're conducting. So the last thing I want to talk about before we walk into the public comment is future data integration paths. So we will be integrating additional data from DWS. So specifically here, we're looking at eligibility data. So things like Medicaid, medical, financial, SNAP, general assistance, special payments, child care, and also from the Office of Child Care, we are looking also at subsidy data. So that is sort of the future of what we'd like to integrate beyond, obviously, UDOH's data path that we have already kind of described. So that's coming in the future. So eligibility is actually a massive data set. It's absolutely gargantuous. More updates on that as we move forward with the integration of that data.
Just thinking the Medicaid side of that, though, a third of that population changes every year or so. I mean, so it's not a solid population that you're going to track. I mean, they're going to be in and out, in and out, in and out.
Yeah, I think it's going to be more useful for when we do like research in other realms and see, did they have Medicaid as well?
At a given point in time.
Yeah, at one point in time. Not so much about tracking that population necessarily. So.
And the intergenerational poverty people, they've had that challenge of using that.
Okay, any questions about sort of what I provided an update before we move into public comments and close the meeting today? Okay, seeing none, any public comments? Seeing none either? Okay, great. We'll go ahead and adjourn.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very nice.
So before we do, next meeting puts us in the middle of session, so I don't know. I can't remember where we did last room. Kind of push it out a little bit, but want to get input from. It may be a skeleton meeting if we hide.
I can speak for Scott on Scott's behalf that the superintendent should be so busy with so many things, very much like.
I know the Department of Health is seeing you guys all the time as well, so I don't know. We can chat, but I'm inclined to say April.
April.
That works for everyone.
Yeah, that'd be better. Appreciate that.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. For just about an hour of data meeting, I want to come for a little bit. Like, I got to leave about 4 o'clock today.
Oh, for the health data?
Yeah,
okay.
But I want to come for a little bit. I like to go for a little
bit. And Norm actually emailed me yesterday. He's going to put out the
session.
Yeah, he said, what's going on? Well, I figured you want to come. I'd be there, but if you want to come, you know, if you want to come to your last meeting.
Do you want to share it?
We're going to sit there together. We'll sit there together with Sarah. Yeah.
No, you got to do what you have to do. Yeah. So, what's your